من سخنران امشب جلسه تهران ای ای آقای مید. خانم صدای شما بفرمایید. هم صداش قطع.
Okay. Hello, Mead. My name is Sadie. I'm your translator for the night. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good, good. I'm sorry. The secretary is having some internet problems. I understand you're speaking about the step 8 and 9, mostly 9, right?
Yeah, I can do that. I thought I'd tell my story. And work
oh,
that
good.
In. Okay.
That's great. That's good. That's the way usually everybody does. So please go ahead. Talk in small increments so I can translate. And if you can, avoid the huge words as my English is limited. Okay.
Yeah, and just,
thank
you. Stop me. You know, stop me if it's too much or, you know.
Okay, darling. Okay, go ahead.
So my name is Mead, that's M-E-A-D, Mead, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm speaking from New York, and my home group is now called the Donut Holes, and we meet 7 days a week in the morning, it's for an hour, 7:15 Monday through Friday. And 8 o'clock on weekends, Saturday and Sunday. And it's a topic meeting. So each meeting has a leader who speaks for about 5 minutes. And then we go round robin and reflect on what the speaker said. Mondays we do the big book. And Wednesdays we do the 12 and 12.
Okay, that's great. And Salam Bedrus. Okay, go ahead. You want to say more? I can handle more.
Just to finish up the description of the meeting.
Sure. Okay.
On Mondays, we read just short sections of the big book, three to four pages. And there's a schedule we follow so that I think it takes an entire year to read through the big book. And we also on Monday have the reading is followed by 5 minutes of meditation, okay? And then we go to the regular schedule of, you know, the speaker leads for 5 minutes and so on. And then on Wednesdays for the 12 and 12, we read a chapter of the 12 and 12, right? And last week it was the fourth step, this coming Wednesday is the fifth step, okay? That's my meeting.
I don't know why I am losing your voice. I did say what I heard. It's okay. I say what I heard. سلام به دوستان عزیزم. اسم من مید هستش. I lost about 1 minute the last part. But I guess our internet is okay now. سلام دوستان عزیزم. اسم من مید هستش. من یک الکلی هستم و از کشور آمریکا با شما صحبت.
Yeah, I've lost you. I've lost your CD. I'm afraid you're frozen, CD, and I can't hear anything.
Yeah.
Am I still, can people hear me?
بچه فکر کنم سیدی هم پرد شد بیرون از توی جلسه. اینترنت ایران امشب ضعیفه. خانم سیدی
We lost CD?
هستم توی جلسه. سیدی خانم سیدی اگه هستیم لطفا علامت سوال بزنید. آقا ما
یه لحظه عدیق رو تو هم بیارید رو خط که بلا سلام سلام یه لحظه علی رو علی رو بی حالا من یه لحظه علی رو میکروفونش رو باز کنم یه لحظه من علی رو هم نمیدونم با یه لحظه باهاش صحبت کنین مترجم قد شد با مترجم و علی آقا
Do you hear me? Is somebody there? I am back.
I see you.
Okay, mate, I'm sorry. I don't know what happened. Let me translate what I heard. دوستان عزیزم من معذرت میخوام نفهمیدم اینترنت ها چی شد. مید دوست عزیزمون میگه من از نیویورک هستم. من الکلی هستم و یک جلسه خانگی دارم. جلسه خانگی من 7 روز در هفته اتفاق میفته، از 7:30 صبح شروع میشه، از دوشنبه تا جمعه و روزای تعطیل 8 صبح هستش. دوست داره که یه مقداری بیشتر راجع به جلسه خانگیش ما بدونیم. میگه ما جلساتمون موضوع داره و در جلسات موضوع دارمون سخنران داریم، سخنران یه مقداری کمی صحبت میکنه و بعد ما راجب مسائلی که سخنران گفته اونو ادامه میدیم و حرف میزنیم. قسمت بعدی اینه که ما دوشنبه ها از بیگ بوک الکلیا میخونیم، 3-4 سفر رو میخونیم و بعد راجبش صحبت میکنیم. به نظر من میرسه که دوشنبه ها کتاب الکلیا احتمالا 1 سال طول میکشه تا خونده بشه اینجوری تو جلسات، و 4 شنبه ها ما از 12:12 میخونیم قدم ها سنت ها، از اون کتاب میخونیم. دوست داری که فرمت جلسه شما ها بدونیم. مید گو هد.
اوکی اند Yeah, I just wanted to give you an idea of what our meeting was and how it was structured. Everything's a little bit different. And if people don't have a topic, you know, the person, we elect chair people every quarter. There's a new election. And you know, they can bring any topic they want to, but often people use the reflection of the day. You know, on the GSO website, mm-hmm. at the very top on the left, there's a reflection of the day that usually begins with a quotation from the big book or some other writing of you know, AA-approved literature, and then there's a little reflection underneath it. They're very good. It's available to anyone who's got an internet service, and I highly recommend it. And that's often, you know, the way the meeting is, the topic is chosen.
That's great. میگه که اگر موضوعی نداشته باشه جلسه ما، ما میریم توی سایتمون، به شما هم پیشنهاد میکنم این کارو بکنید. یه چیزی هست برام بازتاب‌های روزانه، دیلی ریفلکشن، اون بالا دست چپ همیشه هستش برای همه و هر روز یه چیز جدیده. ما اونو انتخاب میکنیم به عنوان موضوع جلسه و راجع به اون صحبت میکنیم و پیشنهاد میکنم همتون این بازتاب‌های روزانه رو ازش استفاده کنید، بخونیدش. اوکی مید؟ دیلی ریفلکشن. اوکی.
All right. Now, normally, most meetings in the city in New York here, if you're not familiar, they often meet in the basements of churches. That's typically a meeting place. There's other places also, but when the pandemic started last March, you know, March of 2020, everything closed, including the churches. And that's when everybody discovered Zoom and went online for Zoom meetings. And I think it's been a real blessing, probably enlarging the scope of AA for a lot of people. My home group before this pandemic year was called Chapter 5, and we met in the basement of a church. And the great majority of members from Chapter 5 went on Zoom. And now that's quite an international meeting. They have people from all over the place who are regular members of that meeting. But there were a group of us who decided that we wanted to continue to meet in person. And so we did right from the beginning. We went to a park for a while, you know, just and met outside. They closed the parks because of the pandemic. And then we stood on a street corner, on the corner of 3rd Avenue and 91st Street. And then, but then we found a very nice little urban park on 92nd Street. That's not important, but 92nd Street. And we've been there for almost an entire year. And there are chairs and there are benches. And we've met every day we've met, whether it's been snowing, raining. We have a rain location that we can get under the cover. But we've maintained this in-person meeting throughout the pandemic.
That's great. That was great. میت میگه که بیشتر جلسات اینجا تو نیویورک تو زیرزمین کلیساها تشکیل بشه که خوب شماها بدونید اینجا چه مدلیه و جاهای دیگه هم جلسات تشکیل میشه، ولی وقتی که این همگیری کرونا شروع شد همه جا بسته شد و وقتی که همه جا بسته شد زوم شروع شد و این وجود زوم یک نعمت بود برای اینکه دامنه ای رو بزرگ کرد و گسترده کرد و همه شروع کردن همدیگر رو ببینن و از تجربیات همدیگه استفاده بکنن، بزرگ شد و این خیلی خوبه. من خودم جلسه هایی که میرفتم اسمش بود فصل پنجم چپتر 5 که بیشتر اون آدما اومدن تو زوم و شروع کردن از طریق زوم بین المللی بشن و وصل بشن به بقیه دنیا و این مدلی برن تو جلسات AA. یه گروهی بودن از ما که میخواستن جلسات حضوری باشه و اونم خوب بود. از همون اول جلسات حضوری را انداختن. چجوری؟ شروع کردن رفتن تو پارک با فاصله از همدیگه تو هوای آزاد نشستن، اونا جلسات حضوری دوست داشتن. بعد پارک ها رو بستن به خاطر همین همه گیری. وقتی پارک ها رو بستن تو خیابون نهم نیویورک سر اون نبش وای میستادن با فاصله و همدیگر رو میدیدن و جلسات رو تشکیل میدادن و بعد بالاخره یه پارک محلی پیدا کردن که یه ذره خارج از شهر نیویورک بود و اونجا همدیگر رو میبینن، میز داره، صندلی داره، همون به اندازه یه دونه پارک و همدیگر رو هر روز اونجا دیدن برای جلسه در برف و باران و سرما و همه چیز. و وقتی هم که بارون میاد یه جایی هستش که بتونن برن زیرش جمع شن و صحبتش در مجموع اینه که یه عده هستن که میخوان حضوری جلسه داشته باشن و به هر آب و آتیشی بوده خودشون رو زدن که با وجود پندمی جلسه داشته باشن و از هم دور وایسن که مریضی هم نگیرن. میت، go ahead, that was a great story about reading.
And we still don't know when things are going to open up, so we'll continue to meet as we can. But my story is that, you know, I drank from a pretty early age. I'm old enough so that it was difficult to get alcohol, actually, when I was very young. I had to actually, you know, steal it or get it from my parents or availability was a problem. But I tried hard. And, you know, right from the start, I had problems with drinking. My problems were that once I started, I couldn't stop. That was the main problem. And I found myself drunk when I didn't want to be, and I found myself drunk when I shouldn't be. That was a pattern that persisted throughout my drinking and caused me a lot of problems.
Okay. That was great. خب بگه که هنوزم ما نمیدونیم که ما این پندمی کی میبنده، برای همین ما ادامه میدیم به این جلسات حضوریمون تا بالاخره ببینیم چه اتفاقی میفته. حالا راجع به مشروب خوردنم بخوام بگم که من از سن کم شروع کردم مشروب بخورم، الان از من سن و ساری گذشته، اما اون موقع که شروع کردم به مشروب نمیدادم به خاطر زیر سن قانونی بودنم و یا میدزدیدم یا از پدر مادرم میگیرم. به هر حال در دسترس بودن مشروب الکل برای من یه مشکل بود، اما من بسیار سخت میکوشیدم تا بر این مشکل مسلط بشم، فائق بیام و مشروب پیدا بکنم. مسئله من با مشروب این بود، از همون بچگی که از همون جوانی که وقتی شروع می کردم نمیتونستم دیگه قطع بکنم و وقتی که نمیخواستم مست باشم مست می کردم و وقتی هم که نباید مست می شدم مست می کردم و این شده بود الگوی من در مشروب خوری. همیشه جاهایی که نباید می نوشیدم و این یه الگو بود برا من. ببخشید خشخش تو بلندگو میاد. Go ahead, Mead.
So, you know, my drinking increased when I went to college, and at university my drinking increased a great deal. And really, are you there or did I lose you?
Yes, I'm here. Okay. I'm here.
Right. Okay, good.
I can see you.
All right, good.
I can hear you. There you are. Okay.
And, you know, that was the first time that it was really freely available. And I got into trouble. I was, you know, on disciplinary and academic probation, you know, for my first 2 years. And I almost got kicked out. And that almost runs throughout my story. I almost got kicked out, but I got scared. And, you know, beginning about my junior year, I straightened up a little bit and, you know, started applying myself, and I graduated. I went in the military. I went in the Navy. Was in the Navy for 3 years. Again, I had difficulty there. Got into trouble. When I got out, you know, I went to graduate school met my wife actually in London, and we were in graduate school together, you know, for a period. And then I started a career that involved actually research, demographic research in Asia. I spent a lot of time in South Asia and sometime in the Middle East, but mostly in South Asia. And I lived in Bangladesh, actually, for 3 years. At the time, this was like 1975 to 1978. And it is and was an Islamic state also. And there were the same restrictions about drinking there, perhaps, as there are in Iran. Although I don't know how they compare, so I'll stop there. Okay, for a minute.
Okay, that's great. You stop. You know exactly when to stop. That's beautiful. Seems like you have done that a lot before. Mead میگه که خب من به هر حال مشروب خوردنم وقتی رفتم کالج، یعنی از دانشگاه که میای بیرون یه 2 سال داری که میری کالج. وقتی رفتم کالج مشروب خوردنم زیادتر شد. از کالج که میای بیرون میری دانشگاه که 2 سال یا هر چقدر بخوایم میری دانشگاه، باز اونجا مشروب خوردنم زیادتر شد، یعنی هی پیشرونده زیاد میشد. اولین بار بود ولی که خیلی در دسترس من بود، بنابراین من تا میتونستم به خاطر در دسترس بودنش ازش استفاده میکردم، از مشروب، و به درد سر افتادم هم درد سر درسی هم درد سر انضباطی. این است که یه ذره خودم رو جمع جور کردم و نظم و نظارت به خودم دادم، ولی تحت نظر بودم تو مدرسه و در حال اخراج شدن بودم. خودم رو یه کوچولو جمع جور کردم، ولی بالاخره اومدم بیرون و رفتم توی نیروی دریایی ایالات متحده. اونجا یکم به درد سرهایی افتادم، نیرو دریایی تموم شد، اومدم بیرون و رفتم به دانشگاه برای فوق لیسانس. اونجا تو دانشگاه که می رفتم فوق لیسانس، همسرم رو دیدم توی شهر لندن و با همسرم با همدیگه می رفتیم برای گرفتن فوق لیسانسی دانشگاه می رفتیم. بعد از فوق لیسانس هم کارم رو شروع کردم. کارم چی بود؟ تحقیقات آماری بود راجع به قسمت های تو آسیا و من آسیا زیاد زندگی کردم، بیشتر جنوب آسیا زندگی کردم و در حقیقت من تو بنگلادش 3 سال زندگی کردم. باز دوباره بنگلادش هم گرفتم، اونجا دچار محدودیت الکل شدم به خاطر اینکه کشور مسلمونه و فکر میکنم، مطمئن نیستم که چجوری مقایسش میشه کرد با ایران، فکر میکنم کشور شماها توش محدودیت الکل وجود داشته باشه. Go ahead, Mead. Yes, we have limitation in terms of alcohol in Iran.
Yeah, and so there was the foreigners in Bangladesh, well, the diplomatic community anyway, but foreigners more generally, you know, they had access to alcohol through a bonded warehouse, what was called a bonded warehouse, and so there was a source of alcohol for foreigners, and you had to go down and you bought it in quantity. I used to buy cases of Ballantine scotch at a time, and for most of the 3 years that I was in Bangladesh, my wife was continued in graduate school in Baltimore. So for the most of the time she was in Baltimore, I was in Dhaka in Bangladesh. And
so two countries away.
That's right. And everything was very different then. I mean, you know, phone calls were difficult. Everything was, communications were difficult. But I would drink, and my pattern was when I was married, when I was with my wife, my drinking was much better. When I was on my own, it was really bad. And you know, in Bangladesh at nights, at least when I was in the capital, when I was at home, you know, I'd drink that scotch by myself and get drunk. I had a very limited number. I had about 10 cassette tapes and for music. And I would play those same cassette tapes over and over again. I have them memorized still. There was no TV, and there were some things you could do, but not a whole lot. So I just drank like that when I was there.
اوکی، that's great. میت میگه که حالا وقتی که خارجی باشی تو بنگلادش یه جورایی دسترسی به مشروب پیدا میکنی. دیپلومات ها دسترسی داشتن، خارجی ها به یه شکلی، یه انباری بود که یه حالت انبار پلم شده بود که به هر حال میشد بهش دسترسی پیدا کرد و خارجی ها میرفتن از اونجا مشروب میگرفتن، ولی بعد زیاد میگرفتن. من در زمانی که تو بنگلادش بودم میرفتم کارتون‌های زیادی ویسکی بلنتاین میگرفتم و همسرم تو بالتیمور بود. بالتیمور یه ایالتیه توی نیورلینز تو آمریکا، ولی خود میت توی بنگلادش بوده و میگه این دوریم اصلا به من کمک نمیکرد شرایط منو. من تلفن کردم برامون سخت بود، همدیگر رو دیدم برامون سخت بود و وقتی با همسرم بودم کمتر مشروب میخوردم، اما تنها که میشدم کاری نداشتم بکنم، میزدم به مشروب خوردن، اسکاچ میخوردم، مست میشدم. اصلا اونجا تو بنگلادش من 10 دونه نوار کاست داشتم، تلویزیون نداشتم، کار زیادی نبود که انجام بدم و اینا همه باعث میشد که تنهایی به من رو بیاره و منم رو میوردم به مشروب. خانومم هم تو آمریکا. اوکی؟
So it went, and then when I left Bangladesh I got a job in New York. At the time my then wife had, you know, graduated from university, not university, graduate program, and had a nice job in Washington, D.C. And she didn't want to come to New York. She continued that job. So, you know, I for a year and a half after getting back, I would commute down to D.C., Washington, on weekends, and then come back and work during the weekdays. And that was a period of very, very heavy drinking also.
And separation from wife again.
Again, separation from wife. On one hand, that was no way to have a marriage. On the other hand, it explains why we were married so long, I think.
That was great. خب میگه که به هر حال من از بنگلادش اومدم بیرون. از بنگلادش اومدم بیرون و تو نیویورک مشغول به کار شدم. همسرم تو برنامه فارغ التحصیلی خودش بود. یه کار خیلی خوبی گرفت توی واشنگتن دی سی و دوست نداشت که بیاد نیویورک. دوباره من نیویورک کار میکردم. همسرم واشنگتن دی سی کار میکرد. میرفتم واشنگتن همسرم رو تو ویکند ها میدیدم. برمیگشتم به نیویورک. دوباره دوران جدایی از همسرم، دوباره دوران مشروب خوری خیلی سنگین. اوکی؟
So eventually my wife came up to New York, but she came up with a lot of resentment because her degrees of freedom were very reduced. I mean, I was in New York, she had to find a job in New York. And she was pretty fed up by then anyway, I think. And the more fed up she got, the more I drank. And the more I drank, the more fed up she got. So she divorced me about 2 years after coming up to New York. And that was the end of that. And my solution was to drink more, of course, because I wasn't happy with the divorce, so I drank even more.
خب حالا میگه که نهایتا همسرم واشنگتن دی سی رو ول کرد اومد نیویورک پیش من، ولی با رنجش بسیار اومد پیش من، چون که سطح و لول کاریش و اینا اومده بود پایین و مجبور بود دنبال کار بگرده. به لحاظ شغلی تو واشنگتن دی سی راحت تر بود، بیشتر دوست داشت و کلا کلافه بود، کلافه میشد. هر چی زنم بیشتر کلافه میشد، من بیشتر مشروب میخوردم. هرچه اون بیشتر گرفتار میشد تو این شرایط زندگی که داشتیم، من بیشتر میخوردم. تا بالاخره همسرم از من تقاضا کرد که جدا بشه. به نوعی همسرم منو طلاق داد و این هم فشار زیادی روی من گذاشت مید و مشروب خوردن من همینجور سنگین و سنگین تر شد. اوکی؟
You know, I muddled along after my wife left, and as I said, my drinking got worse and worse. You know, I think I got depressed, and so on. And eventually, I got together with a woman that I was living with and her son, and we moved in together, and we were together for a couple of years, but that was just towards the end. You know, about 4 years after my wife divorced me, I came into AA. And,
so you got divorced from your second lady?
No, sorry. No, there was only one divorce at that time.
Okay.
And so I was on my own, but then I hooked up with another woman. We weren't married. We lived together, but we weren't married. And but that was, you know, there were problems throughout that, and particularly with my drinking. And eventually it got bad enough, so she just kicked me out. And in early April of 1985, I found myself living, not living, but sleeping, you know, on a couch in the office. And there I found myself on a beautiful Saturday morning in April of 1985. Okay.
Okay. خیلی خوب مید میگه که مید میگه که به هر حال من همسرم رفت و من لنگ لنگان خودم رو میکشیدم و افسرده بودم و مشروبم زیاد میخوردم. یه خانم دیگه سرکلش تو زندگی من پیدا شد که با هم زندگی میکردیم بدون اینکه با هم ازدواج بکنیم، اما مشکلات مشروب خوری من همچنان بود و این خانم از مشروب خوری من خسته شد، اذیت شد و منو انداخت بیرون از آپارتمان، اصلا منو از زندگیش بیرون کرد. و در آپریل 1985 یه روز به خودم اومدم دیدم که یک روز شنبه خیلی زیبا من خوابیدم توی دفترم روی کاناپه، جا نداشتم برای خوابیدن. اوکی؟ On the couch.
Well, yeah, the thing that got me thrown out was the final straw, but it happened many, many times. Her mother was visiting from Europe. She was very, very ill. She was going back home to Europe, and the woman I was living with had a special dinner for her. I was expected at dinner time, and I got drunk and, you know, came in at midnight, you know. So that's why I was kicked out of the apartment. But, you know, it was, as I say, a Saturday morning. I didn't know what to do with myself. And my parents at the time lived in just outside of Washington, D.C. So I called them and asked whether I could come down for the weekend. And I went out and I took a plane. I took a plane from LaGuardia down to Washington, D.C. And I was hungover, but I wasn't thinking about drinking. I wasn't thinking about stopping drinking. But on that plane, I had a most amazing epiphany. I had a most amazing experience of just a sudden realization that drinking was my problem, that alcohol was my problem, that I was an alcoholic, and that AA was the solution. And it came to me as a whole thought. It was very striking. I felt exhilaration when it happened to me. I was just reading on the airplane, and my parents met me at the airport. I was 38 years old. I was not a boy, 38 years old. But I announced to them when I saw them at the airport, "Mom and Dad, I'm an alcoholic," with some pleasure, you know. And they, in fact, were in AA themselves at the time. Both of them were alcoholics, and both of them were in AA, and they took me to my first meeting. It was noonish, and it was in Bethesda, Maryland.
Such a story. خب میگه من داستانم این شد که همسرم مادرش داشت از اروپا میومد و مریض بود و میخواست شام درست کنه و من رفتم بیرون به مشروب خاری و خیلی دیر اومدم خونه و این شد که منو بیرون کرد و من رفتم تو دفترم. این یه دونه شوک برای من بود و من دیگه جایی نداشتم برای زندگی، چون بیرونم کرده بود. از فرودگاه لاگواردیای نیویورک سوار شدم رفتم به واشنگتن دی سی جایی که پدر مادرم بودن و بهشونم تلفن زدم گفتم من میشه بیام، اونا گفتن باشه. تو تمام مدت هواپیما حالت خماری داشتم از شب قبل و همینجور تو هواپیما که نشسته بودم به ناگهان یه تجربه عجیب غریب برای من رخ داد. با خودم فکر کردم خیلی چجوریه من وضعم این مدلیه و گفتم مشکل من مشروبه و من الکلیم و این منو اصلا تکون داد. منو در ضمنم که به هیجان انداخته بود این دریافتی که کرده بودم، به این درکی که رسیده بودم. اون موقع من پسر بچه‌ام نبودم، 38 سالم بود. به هر حال هواپیما نشست روی زمین، پدر مادرم اومده بودن فرودگاه تو دی سی، واشنگتن دی سی دنبال من. بهشون گفتم که همون لحظه بهشون گفتم من الکلیم، من یک الکلی هستم و پدر مادر خودم هم میرفتن ای ای و اونا هم برنامه‌ای بودن. حرف منو که شنیدن چیز زیادی نگفتن. من اولین جلسه‌مو با پدر و مادرم رفتم تو واشنگتن دی سی. اوکی؟ You went to your first meeting with your mom and dad.
I did. And so that was April 6th, and that's my sobriety date. And as I said, something special happened on that airplane. And looking back at it, it marked a, you know, it was a clear boundary. There was everything that preceded it, and then there was everything that's followed. And the two have had nothing to do with each other. In other words, and fortunately for me, I think that helped me, you know, stay stopped. In other words, not, you know, in other words, that was my last drink. My last drink was early in the morning, you know, of April 6th, and I haven't had a drink since. And So it was an amazing sort of watershed experience. Anyway, I went back to New York, you know, after the weekend, and my first meeting in New York was on that Monday. And, you know, I went forward at the end of the meeting and asked, what do I do now? And, you know, someone said, get a sponsor here. This guy, get this guy. This is your sponsor. And here's a meeting book, and here's meetings to go to every night of the week. I still worked, so I had a 9-to-5 job, so, it was my evenings that I had to fill up. You know, that's when I went to meetings. So I started going to meetings. In New York, they count days. They count, beginners are asked to count days through 90 days, which is nice. You get, you know, a group of people who are counting days together, and there's some camaraderie amongst the newcomers. And, you know, you're encouraged to, listen and take suggestions. The most important thing then and now is don't drink no matter what. There's an expression, don't drink even if your ass falls off. You know, pardon the expression. In other words, no matter what happens, you do not drink. And if you have to summon your will to do that, fine. But just don't, under any circumstances, do that. And go to meetings, you know. And that's the foundation of my program. So, you know, I'll let you go with that.
Okay. So you're in New York now. You start
now. I'm in New York. Yes, and I continue in New York. Right? I came back to New York from that weekend and started go to meetings in New York.
Great, and you started back your job. Meet me. Yes. که خب حالا 6 آپریل روز هوشیاری من بود. من اتفاقی که توی هواپیما برای من افتاد یه اتفاق خیلی یه خط خیلی شفافی بود. اتفاقاتی که افتاد و وقایعی که بعدش برای من افتاد. صبح زود بود، من آخرین مشروبم رو 6 آپریل صبح خیلی زود خوردم و بعد اون تجربه حیرت آور توی هواپیما برای من اتفاق افتاد. بعد من رفتم واشنگتن با مادرم، اینا رفتم جلسه، دوباره حالا برگشتم نیویورک و رفتم به جلساتی که توی نیویورکه. اونجا تو جلسه ازشون پرسیدم که چه کار باید بکنم. گفتن اولا که راهنما بگیر. همجور متحیر نگاه میکردم، یه آقای اونجا بایستده بگفتم بیا همین این آقا راهنمای تو، این که از راهنمات. بعد کتاب میمدادن، گفتن کتابو بخون. من اون موقع خب شغل 9 صبح تا 5 بعد از ظهر داشتم، شبام بود که باید پر میکردم از ترس مشروب. این است که شبا میرفتم جلسه. تو نیویورک قانونش اینه که روز شمار برای تازه وارد، یه روز، دو روز، سه روز پاکی میگن تا 90 روز، که تو ایران خودمونم البته همین جوریه. و این میگه خوبه، تشویق میشی. و توی این جلسات من خیلی تشویق شدم که گوش کنم و تو رو تشویق میکنن که به پیشنهادات توجه بکنید، تشویقت میکنن که پیشنهادات رو بخوای و از همه چیز مهمتر چه اون موقع چه الان اینه که تو مشروب نخوری. میگن هر اتفاقی که افتاد مشروب نخور، جلسه برو و زیادم برو. این زیربنای پاکی و هوشیاری منه. اینجوری شروع شد، این زیر زیرشه. اوکی؟
So, now, what I discovered, you know, pretty quickly is that, and in reflection, looking back, I can see it clearly, that I used alcohol to medicate myself, primarily. I drank alone, and I drank for effect. And what I discovered when I stopped drinking was that those conditions that I drank for, you know, began to flourish. And in particular, anxiety, very serious anxiety, particularly in my first year, but just as a newcomer, and depression. I found the second year I had a lot of problems with that. You know, I found that I was a very fearful person, and I think I drank. You know, just to, as I say, just to address those problems. So I drank to medicate myself. And when I got sober, I took the medication away. So what was I going to do?
میده عزیز میگه که من به سرعت فهمیدم الان که نگاه میکنم به عقب، باز الانم همون فکر رو میکنم، دریافتم همونه که من از الکل مثل دارو استفاده میکردم. اولا که من همیشه تنها الکل میخوردم و برای تأثیرش میخوردم و میخوردم مثل این که دارم دارو میخورم که حالم خوب بشه، و وقتی که قطع کردم اون شرایطی که داشتم که مشروب میخوردم به طور فزایندهی زیاد شد، مثل استرابم و مثل حالتهای افسردگیم، و تو سال دوم اینا دیگه به اوجش رسید و من اونجا بود که فهمیدم من یه آدمیم پر از ترس، ترس خیلی زیاد دارم، و باز دوباره میگه میخوردم مثل دارو برای این ترس ها و شرایطی که داشتم. و حالا فکر کنید که شما، من اگه اینو به عنوان دارو استفاده می کردم، حالا من اومدم هوشیار شدم، خب مثل اینه که دارو می خوردم، دارومو گذاشتم کنار، حالا دارومو گذاشتم کنار، خب مریضیم تشدید میشه، میزنه بالا، حالا چیکار بعد می کردم بدون دارو؟ اوکی؟
A very distinctive characteristic shared by almost all alcoholics that I know of is, you know, extraordinary self-will. You know, you hear the expression self-will run riot.
Yeah.
and a lot of that is fear-driven, but it's certainly a problem that I have to deal with. And, you know, that carries on into sobriety. It's not something that I leave just because I put down the drink. And the steps are there, you know, as a program of recovery to basically, one way of looking at the steps is to free us from the bondage of self, to free us from the prison of self, to free us from really the curse of self-will, fear-driven self-will.
Okay, are you finished?
Yeah.
میگه که خب من حالا این دارومو گذاشتم کنار، ولی بیماریمو هنوز دارم، پس بیماریم تشدید پیدا میکنه بدون داروم. و یه چیز بسیار بارز در شخصیت ما الکلی ها وجود داره که ما خیلی اراده شخصی قوی داریم، و همینطور که کتاب میگه ما متکی به اراده آشوبگر خودمون هستیم، با این اراده خودمون که مدام دردسر ایجاد میکنه میخوایم بریم جلو، و اینا همه مال من از ترس بود و من باید یه کاری راجع بهش میکردم، یه کاری به غیر از مشروب خوردن. و قدمای 12 گانه اینجان که توی برنامه بهبودی به من بتونن کمک بکنن، این قدم ها منو آزاد میکنه. خود کتاب میگه منو از دست خودم آزاد میکنه، منو از شر خودم رها میکنه و منو از اون زندان خودساختهی که هستم توش میاره بیرون، و از دست اراده شخصیم منو نجات میده. که نت مید میگه مسئله یک معتاد مسئله اراده شخصیشه که روش پافشاری میکنه. مید، go ahead, dear. Personal will.
So, step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. We admitted we were powerless. I mean, that is a huge step. You know, it's signals defeat. And, you know, the war is over and we lost. And, you know, And the second step came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. What's important about the second step for me is that it's not me. In other words, this is all about self and then opposition to self. I may have a well or a poorly formed idea of a higher power, but, you know, and I believe that it's all a process. All of the steps are a process. I don't believe any of them are just one and done, right? I think we're invited to be in the steps all our lives, you know, and we benefit from that. But it's essential that it's sort of like any higher power but me. Huh? For me, that's the importance of the second step. And, okay. Yeah.
Okay. حالا میگه قدم ها. خب قدم یک میگه ما اقرار کردیم که در مقابل اعتیادمان عاجزیم و زندگیمون پریشون شده. میگه این کمبود قدرت یه گام خیلی خیلی بزرگه و حالا معنیش چیه واسه یه کسی که داره الکل میخوره؟ یعنی من شکست خوردم، دنیا برای من تموم شد و ما باختیم، ما نتونستیم، کمبود قدرت داریم، عاجزیم. و این که از قدم یک. اما قدم دو میگه یک نیروی برتر میتونه عقل و سلامت عقل و به زندگی من برگردونه و این خیلی مهمه که من بدونم هر ایده‌ای که من از نیروی برتر دارم که داشتم ایده خوبیه. مهمه که این نیروی برتر هر چیزی باشه به غیر از خود من، که تا اون موقع نیروی برتر خود ما بودیم و الان درک مهم از قدم دو اینه که من خودم رو بذارم کنار و کسی که از من قدرتمندتره رو بیارم به جلو و بر این باورم که قدم ها فرایند کم کم اتفاق میفته و در طول عمر ما باید بره جلو و یه بارکی و یه هویی نیستش، فرایندیه. اوکی؟
Right, in step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of a higher power. And this also is an ongoing process as far as I'm concerned. But it's essential because in doing so, you know, we're ready to engage in the program of action that the rest of the steps entail. And the rest of the steps, you know, can be thought of as practical means for clearing a channel between myself and a higher power so that I can better understand what my higher power's will is for me, and so that I can let go of limited objectives, which is all I am capable of on my own, driven by fear and self-centeredness, and open myself to a richer world, which is that of God's will, if you wish. Okay, the will of my higher power. All the rest of the stuff.
Okay. میگه در قدم سوم ما یه تصمیمه که میگیریم، این تصمیمه که زندگیمونو و ارادمونو به نگهداری خداوند بدیم و اینم باز یک قدم همیشگیه و یک قدم مدامه و مهمه، چون که ما تو این قدم با عمل کردن آشنا میشیم، باید یک حرکتی انجام بدیم تو این عمل و بقیه قدم ها هم یک راهنماهایی هستن برای ما که عملیه. عمل ما باید یک اعمالی انجام بدیم که کانالی رو که بین ما و خداوند هست باز کنیم، این کانالی که بسته بوده، و بفهمیم که اراده خدا برای من چیزی است که من چیزایی رو که خودم میخوام انجام بدم و فکر میکنم برای من خوبه از دست بدم و گردن بذارم به اراده خداوند. و بقیه قدم هم همینو از من میخواد، گردن نهادن به اراده خداوند. مید؟
So, step four, made a fearless and moral inventory of ourselves. You know, we try to uncover so-called defects of character. We gain entree, at least in the suggestions in the big book, by focusing on resentments and people that we have resentments towards, and also institutions. It could be anything we have resentments towards. And in step five, we share this. We share these insights not only with ourselves and a higher power, but also with another human being. Six and seven, not to be glossed over, but become entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove these defects. You know, eight and nine continues, trying to clear away the wreckage and to open that channel between myself and a higher power and whatever his will is for me. I am satisfied with the notion that God's will for me is to live in a state of courtesy, kindness, justice, and love. That's not where my self-centered, fear-driven will takes me, you know? Courtesy, kindness, justice, and love. And more will be revealed, right? But these defects of character and, you know, the... you know, these broken relationships with the people in our lives and the people of the past keep us in that prison of self. And that's the purpose of these steps. And I'm, you know, I've been sober for 36 years now. Just April 6th was my 36th year anniversary. And I am still gaining insight. Not still gaining insight. It all feels very fresh to me, you know? Things are revealed to me when they're revealed, and I'll only know it when it happens. And, you know, in the moment, I'll do the best I can with these steps. But often there's much more to be revealed, right? And it's important to do the steps with somebody else because... it helps us understand and gain from other people's experience.
Okay. I will say that and then we will go to step 9. خب میت میگه که قدم چهارم هم که به ما میگه یک ترازنامه اخلاقی درست کنیم که تمرکز زیادش روی رنجش های ماست. رنجش های ما هم لزوما نباید فقط از دست آدم ها باشه. رنجش های ما میتونه از مکان ها و از ارگان ها هم باشه و بعد در قدم 5 ما اینو برای کس دیگه میخونیم به غیر از خودمون و خداوند و این خیلی مهمه که ما این قدم رو انجام بدیم واسه کس دیگه بخونیم. حالا میرسیم به قدم 6 و 7 که آماده شدیم خداوند نواقص اخلاقی ما رو که تو قدم 5 در اومده از ما بگیره و در قدم 7 اینو میخوام که با فروتنی زیاد انجام بشه و قدم 8 هم به ما میگه که ما باید خرابی هایی رو که به وجود آوردیم و کارهای اشتباهی رو که کردیم همه رو درست کنیم تا این کانال باز بشه، کانال بین ما و خدا بیشتر باز بشه. و من الان قانع شدم که اراده خدا برای من خودش میگه، از قول خودش داره میگه، من الان کاملا قانع و مجاب شدم که اراده خداوند برای من احترام گذاشتن، محبت کردن، منصف بودن تو زندگیه و اینا چیزایی که خداوند برای من میخواد و بیشترش هم هی به من بر من آشکار میشه. و من وقتی که با روابط قطع شده و خراب و نیمه کاره و درست نشده و درست پایان نیافته همینجوری رها شدم، اینا منو توی زندان خودساخته خودم نگه میداره و من الان 36 ساله که هوشیارم و هنوز چیزهایی بر من آشکار میشه که برام تازه است و میدونم که این چیزها همینجور ادامه هم پیدا میکنه. آشکار شدن چیزهای جدید برای ما نسبت به اراده خداوند. در ضمن میگه خیلی مهمه که شما قدم ها رو با کس دیگه کار بکنی، کسی که بتونه به تو یاد بده و به تو کمک بکنه که چطوری این قدم ها رو کار بکنی. اوکی میر؟
So Step 8 made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And 9 made such amends to made amends to such people as we have harmed, except when to do so would injure those or others. You know, the by the time we've gotten to step 8, we should have a pretty good idea of the people who should be on our 8-step list. If we've been able to successfully do the 4th step using the suggestions of the big book, you know, we'll have a list of people, the list of people in our resentments list. Sometimes it'll be apparent. I mean, the people we owe amends to will be, you know, you can almost assume that it's going to be your immediate family, however that's composed, birth, marriage, family, employers, and possibly friends. It's important to do the 8th step with a sponsor, I think, because sometimes we're not the best judge of either the harms that we think we've committed, you know, or, you know, the appropriate people for the list, right? Sometimes we think, just our judgment isn't always great, and it's good to talk it out with somebody else. And as far as the 9th step goes, you know, it takes courage. It takes courage. And, you know, it takes some discretion. The more honest that we can be, you know, the more open and honest that we can be, the more we're going to get out of these steps. And I say that advisedly because, you know, I think that, you know, I like to think that honesty is, you know, comes to me fairly naturally, but it's not true. It's not true. I mean, I have secrets. I've held secrets for most of my life. You know, I want people to think a particular way of me. And, you know, I'm very invested in that. And we've got to be vulnerable to some extent. And we've got to try to be honest and open. And, I think there are great rewards when you're able to do this. And as I say, I think always we do the best we can at the time, right? And there's no such thing as perfect steps. And we can always do it again later, okay?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you want to tell us, after I translate, some things about your amends that you made, and let me translate while you think about that. قدم هشتو میگه خب ما یه لیستی تهیه کردیم از آدمایی که بهشون خسارت زده بودیم و اذیتشون کرده بودیم. تو این مقطع از هوشیاری تقریبا دیگه میدونی که چه کسایی باید توی لیست قدم هشت تو باشن. و تو قدم 9 هم خب ما از این آدم ها جبران خسارت کردیم به غیر از کسانی که ممکن بود بهشون آسیبی برسه و اگه تو قدم 8 یکمی شک داری چه کسایی باید توی لیست تو باشن میتونی برگردی به قدم 4 رجوع بکنی یه نگاهی به آدم هایی که تو لیست رنجشات هستن بندازی اونجا بهت کمک میکنه برای لیست آدمایی که تو قدم 8 میخوای بذاری اونایی که تو اذیتشون کردی و احتمالا توی قدم 9 جبران خسارت هایی که باید بکنی قطعا خانواده اولیت که هستن ولی دوستات و کسانی که براشون کار کردی و اونا هم احتمالا جزو لیستتن و این قدم ها رو خیلی مهمه 8 و 9 رو با راهنمات کار بکنی ما معمولا ممکنه نتونیم درست قضاوت بکنیم که با کس دیگه چی کار کردیم چی باید بگیم و خوبه یه نفر دیگه باشه که به ما اینو بگه تو قدم 9 شهامت خیلی مهمه و تشخیص دادن چیزها هم خیلی مهمه و هرچه بیشتر صداقت داشته باشی تو قدم نهم و بیشتر باز باشی، اوپن باشی، بهتر میتونی به خودت کمک بکنی. و ما هممون دوست داریم بگیم که من دوست دارم بگم به طور طبیعی آدم صادقیم، ولی این حرف دروغه. من همه عمرم راز نگه داشتم، گرایش دارم، علاقه دارم به اینکه راز نگه دارم و میدونی هیچ چیزی به اون به نام یک قدم خیلی عالی وجود نداره. یه قدم خوب تو میتونی کار کنی و اگه خیلی خوب نبود میتونی بعدم بری و یه بار دیگه کارش بکنی، ولی اینه که بری و قدم نه تو انجام بدی. اوکی می
Okay, here I'll give you a couple of for me very important ones. I was remarried in sobriety, and my wife also is in AA, and we've been married for about 30 years, and we have two children. We have a daughter, 29, and we have a son, 26. And both of them, my son is actually in AA also. He got sober about 6 or 7 years ago. And my daughter is not currently in AA, but she's been to rehabs, and she may have a problem with alcohol also. And, you know, when she was in rehab, there was a parents' week or a family week where the family came and joined, you know, whoever was in the rehab. It was a week of instruction, and it culminated in a sort of a face-to-face session that was sort of moderated, curated, and. So I was face to face with my daughter after having, you know, sort of gone through several exercises. And I'll tell you, as a result of that experience, something happened, you know, that day where I started crying at the beginning of that session. And we were all in the same room, and I could not stop crying the entire session. And this went on, I mean, it was slightly embarrassing, I was totally out of my control. And what happened that day was that I gave up. You know, just like I surrendered that day, you know, thanks for that almost, I think, intervention by my higher power on that airplane when I got sober. Something similar happened that day, and it was a surrender on my part. I've spent so many years and so much effort, you know, trying to keep my children safe, trying to direct them according to what I thought was best for them. And, you know, I never accepted the fact that they had their own lives, they had their own higher power, and that I was not their higher power. And as a consequence, you know, I developed some, you know, bad relations with my children. You know, it became apparent to me that no matter what I said to them, they heard something that was judgmental from me or criticism. Okay, criticism, judgment, whatever you're doing, it's not right, okay, because it's not the way I want you to do it. And this was a pattern all during their growing up, and I really wasn't aware of it, right? But in the process of them both getting sober, my daughter in the rehab and then my son subsequently, you know, I came to learn that this is what I was been doing. I mean, I learned about that defect of character really in the course of them doing 9 steps with me. And in the course of that experience, I mean, they basically shed light, you know, on my own behavior in a way that I'd never seen before. And as a consequence of that, you know, I started going to Al-Anon, and, you know, I started really addressing the fact that I was trying to live their life, you know, rather than my own. And I was making myself miserable and them miserable. And that what I needed to do was to focus on my own life and my own happiness. And it's apparent that nothing makes them happier than my being happy, you know? I mean, they rejoice in my happiness. And they rejoice in my not interfering with their lives. So that's a little complicated. I have a feeling you tell my story better than I do. But
actually, I am a grateful member of Al-Anon. I can tell your story exactly. I am an honored member of Al-Anon. خب حالا مید میگه که من یه مقداری میخوام از جبران خسارت خودم بگم. یکی دوتا شو براتون. و من وقتی که هوشیار شدم تو هوشیاریم مجددا ازدواج کردم و 30 ساله که با همسرم دارم زندگی میکنم. همسرم هم AA هستش و نتیجه این ازدواج دوتا بچه هست. یک دختر 29 ساله و یک پسر 26 ساله. پسر من AA میره. برای 6-7 ساله پیشه که اومده توی انجمن و الان AA. دخترم هم توی AA نیست و توی مراکز بازپروری بوده و وقتی که توی بازپروری بود هنوز نمیدونیم ما که این الکلی هست یا نیست. ولی تو بازپروری که بود یه هفته داشتن به نام هفته پدر و مادرها که اونا جلسات رو در رو دارن. پدر مادرها میشنن با دختراشون. من با دخترم رو در رو نشستم و بعد از چند تا تمرینی که به ما گفتن انجام بدیم من با این مواجه شدم با این دخترم و یه احساس خیلی عجیبی به من دست داد. من خیلی گریم گرفت و به طور غیر قابل کنترلی اونجا شروع کردم به گریه کردن. یه جور خیلی عجیبی که اصلا نمیتونم براتون بگم. نمیتونستم گریم رو قطع کنم و اونجا یه اتفاقی دوباره برا من افتاد حین اون جلسهه که من دخترمو اینجوری بهش چسبیده بودن و خودمو ول کردم. درست مثل اون مداخله که اون روز خداوند تو هواپیما کرد برای من و منو یه جوری بیدار کرد و هوشیار کرد. اونجا هم من یه تسلیمی از جانب من رخ داد نسبت به بچه‌ام و من چقدر سالهای زیاد مثل هر پدر مادری سعی می کردم تلاش زیاد می کردم که بچه هامو امن و خوب بار بیارم و در امنیت اینا رو نگه دارم که خوب باشن، راضی باشن، خوشحال باشن و نمیتونستم قبول کنم که من که نیروی برتر این بچه ها نیستم. من که خداشون نیستم. اونا خودشون خدای خودشون رو دارن و اینجوری میشد که من هر چی به بچه ها میگفتم یه جوری به نظرشون میومد که یا به نظرشون قضاوت میومد از جانب من یا اینکه انتقاد بود از جانب من و این باعث میشد که همش رابطه ما خراب باشه. و توی این فرایند هوشیار شدن بچه‌هام من فهمیدم که دارم این کارو میکنم که خیلی اشتباهه و این حرکات من باعث بدتر شدن رابطه ما میشه و این در حین قدم نوه من بود که این بچه‌های من کمک کردن، این نورو تابوندن روی این نقص شخصیتی من که من میخوام به جای بچه هام زندگی بکنم. انگار زندگی اونا زندگی منه. من باید زندگی خودم رو بکنم و به عنوان یک پدر یا یک مادر این درکش برای من سخت بود. من این نقص رو داشتم و حین قدم نو هم بچه های نقص من رو به من نشون دادن که من کنترلم روی زندگی اونا احتمالاً زیاده. Go ahead, Mead. I said it exactly.
I've been talking too long, so I'll wrap it up. But what I wanted to say was that there were many years when I, you know, wasn't going to meetings regularly at all. I didn't have a home group. I very infrequently went to meetings. I didn't have a sponsor, and I was, I was in a bad place. You know, I was very much in that prison of self that I talked about earlier. And I didn't drink, but I wasn't a happy camper. And when my son had trouble almost 7 years ago, you know, I tried to help him, and I went to meetings with him. And it was going to Chapter 5, the meeting that I've mentioned as my regular home group before the pandemic. We went together to Chapter 5, and I had another one of those awakenings where I just realized, my God, why am I not coming here regularly? And I started coming back regularly about 7 years ago. And it's been a tremendous blessing. I was lost. I was lost. I was sober, not drinking, but I was lost. And, you know, now I go to a meeting almost every day. You know, I'm truly a member of a fellowship. I give service in my home group. And, you know, when I'm asked to do something, I do it. I don't say no. And the best antidote for my self-centeredness and, you know, the part of my disease of alcoholism that isn't the alcohol, in other words, the I, self, and me, the ism, is to help another alcoholic, you know, to share my story, to talk to another alcoholic, you know, to be open, really to be open to service. And, you know, AA has given me a wonderful life, despite my uneven journey. And so that's more than enough for me, and I apologize for going on, you know, too long.
Okay, you didn't go on too long. You did just perfect, and I thank you. Please stay on until I translate all of that.
Okay.
مید میگه که خیلی خوب، حالا من وقتم داره تموم میشه و میخوام کم کم ببندم حرفامو، ولی آخرین چیزی که میخوام برای همتون بگم و همتون بدونید اینه که من سالهای زیادی بود که توی انجمن بودم، تو AA بودم، ولی مرتب به جلسات نمیرفتم. مثلا یه اشکالم این بود که جلسه خانگی نداشتم یا گاهی وقتا راهنما نداشتم و مشروب نمیخوردم، اما جایگاه خوبی هم نداشتم و تو زندان خودساخته خودم بودم، همون زندانی که اول جلسم براتون گفتم. اصلا یه جایی بودم که راضی نبودم و یه زمانی که پسرم به مشکل برخورد، همون 6-7 سال پیش که براتون گفتم، با پسرم رفتم جلسه، مثل خود مید که با پدر و مادرش رفته جلسه، با پسرم رفتم همون جلسه فصل پنجم چپتر 5 که اول جلسه براتون توضیح دادم. و تو این جلسه ها دوباره این سری که رفتم با پسرم، یه بیداری جدید به من رخ داد. با خودم گفتم چرا من مدام و به دور مداوم نمیام تو جلسات، و الان 7 ساله که من تقریبا هر روز دارم میرم جلسه. و اون موقع قبل از اینکه با پسرم برم هوشیار بودم، اما مثل این که در زندگی گم بودم، انگار که در زندگیم گم بودم. اما الان هر روز میرم جلسه و میتونم بگم که من واقعا به معنای واقعی یک انجمنی کامل هستم. به طور کامل من در AA شرکت میکنم و خدمت میکنم. میدونین یه پادزهری داره خودمحوری ما که هسته اصلی مریضی ماست، و پادزهرش کمک به دیگریه، یعنی از من میره به دیگری، و این پادزهر اصلی مریضی منه. و من به خدمت نه نمیگم. چیز مهم براتون که میخوام بگم اینه که آدم باید همیشه برای خدمت باز باشه، و AA به من یک زندگی عالی داده، علارغم سفر پرپیچ و خمی که داشتم الان دارای یه زندگی عالی هستم. Are you wrapping it up?
Yeah, that's about all from me.
Okay, that was great.
Very best wishes to everybody, and you know, don't you hear it, but don't give up before the miracle. It miracles happen in AA, and but you must not drink. Just, you know, put one day in front of the other, and as much time as you can between you and the last drink. And miracles do happen.
Okay. I will tell them it was my honor to translate for you. I personally learned a lot from you. Mid برای آخرین حرفش میگه که قبل از اینکه معجزه تو AA براتون رخ بده ول نکنید و برید. بمونید تا معجزات رخ بده. اینجا پر از معجزه است. و چیز مهم اینه که نخور. وقتی که نخوری یه روز روزاتو بسازی بدون مشروب، کم کم میبینی که فاصله تو با آخرین مشروبی که خوردی هر روز داره بیشتر میشه و اینم یکی از معجزه هایی که در AA وجود داره. مید خدافظی میکنه، برای تمام بچه های ایران هم آرزوی پاکی و هوشیاری و سلامتی میکنه. Thank you so much مید. ما تمام